Hello there, and welcome to episode number 132 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. All right, so on this week's episode, we got a few different things to break down, starting with the GM meetings that were going on down in Arizona. And they have, funny enough, not funny for the people in Arizona, but they've ended prematurely because of a virus that has taken over the proceedings at the big, assembly down in Arizona, where unfortunately some sort of stomach virus has snuck its way in and forced Major League Baseball to halt the GM meetings before they were scheduled to conclude. And, obviously it goes without saying that hopefully everyone is okay outside of, the regular symptoms that are accompanied by, that type of virus. But we did get to hear from the infamous Scott Boras before the meetings wrapped up, and as per usual, he had a number of different things to say, and had a number of different puns to throw out at the large gathering of media members that spoke to him on Wednesday. And to note, there were a few things that were notable from a Toronto Blue Jays perspective, starting with none other than Matt Chapman, who of course is a Scott Boras client, and he was in Arizona on Tuesday meeting with executives and front office members, just again trying to showcase himself and get the word out and start the train moving, or get the train moving on his respective free agency case. And Scott Boras hyped him up, as most would have expected him to do, talked about a little bit of his value from a Blue Jays perspective, from his leadership qualities, what he brings defensively and offensively, talking about his gold glove level defense, and the fact that he's a 25 potential home run hitter, and that he's very necessary to the Blue Jays' success. And all of that, for the most part, is true. I mean, we all remember what Matt Chapman did this past season with the Blue Jays. He was an elite defender. He was one of, if not the best hitters in baseball for like a month before falling to a below average hitter for the rest of the season. At the same time, Matt Chapman was very valuable to the Blue Jays over his first two seasons with the organization. He was a four-win player in 2022 while playing 155 games. He was worth 3.5 wins in 2023 over 140 games with the team. And, no matter how you feel about 5 of the 6 months of Matt Chapman's performance with the Blue Jays this past season, there's no denying that he's incredibly valuable to the team. I mean, we all remember what third base was and how much of a disaster it was for this team before Chapman's arrival, right? There was that extended period between the end of Josh Donaldson's tenure with the team and the start of Chapman's tenure. There was that, four or five season period there where the hot corner was essentially a black hole for the Blue Jays. where you were just throwing mud at a wall and seeing what would stick, essentially. That's from a defensive perspective. Offensively, yeah. I mean, is Matt Chapman ever going to be the guy who hit 36 home runs, posted a 257 ISO and a 506 slugging percentage? No, probably not. That Matt Chapman is no longer existent, I don't think. But the 3-4 win Matt Chapman is very prominent still. And despite the fact that he'll be 31 years old, Matt Chapman is still, without question, the top third baseman available in free agency. And despite the fact that he has a qualifying offer attached to him, which he will decline, he should still, without a doubt, earn droves of interest across the industry this winter. And personally, I think Matt Chapman wound up pricing himself out of Toronto, despite what Scott Boras said on Wednesday. I just have a hard time seeing the Blue Jays bringing back Matt Chapman. I mean, it's, if we want to look at some contract comparables just to get some sort of idea as to what Matt Chapman could earn, there's no clear-cut template to point to. But, you know, if we look at previous contracts in recent years, from an age perspective, you look at, say, a Jose Ramirez, who signed a very, very team-friendly 7-year, $141 million contract when he was 29 years old. Anthony Rendon, also 29, signed a 7-year, $245 million contract with the Angels. Both players posted much better Fangraphs WAR ratings than Chapman their previous seasons before signing each of those contracts. So I don't expect, you know, Matt Chapman to be in the $35 million per season range like Anthony Rendon is being paid. But if you look at Alex Bregman, Jose Ramirez, Austin Riley, all three of those players are being paid at least $20 million per season. Ramirez easily should be a $30 million player, but again, team-friendly deal, wanted to stay in Cleveland. Austin Riley, similar thing. A much better player than the $21.2 million AAV would suggest. He did get a $10 million, 10-year deal, so that helped lower the AAV, but the type of value he's producing for the Atlanta Braves, a bargain at that price. Alex Bregman might be the closest comparable to Chapman in terms of pure wins above replacement, where, you know, Chapman was worth 3.5 wins over 140 games this past season. Bregman was worth 4.3 over 100 across 161 games. Bregman signed a 4- or 5-year, $100 million contract extension prior to the 2020 season. And, you know, in 2023, he was worth 4.3. 2022, he's worth 5.5. Sure, if you want to go back to the season before he signed that deal, he was worth 8 wins. But obviously, it's a little different because that was a contract extension versus Matt Chapman, who's a free agent. Bregman was also still an arbitration eligible player back then. So it's a little apples to oranges, but I think we can absolutely bank on the fact that Chapman's probably going to be getting, you know, 5-year deal, 4-year deal, north, well north of $20 million per season. And again, like, the Blue Jays would love to have him back, especially because of his defense. However, you have to keep in mind the fact that he's just unpredictable from an offensive perspective, right? Like, are you going to commit over $100 million to a player that is going to continue to provide you elite defense, but you don't really have any sort of idea what you're going to get out of him at the plate? Like, I don't know. Like, for an offense that underperformed by significant standards this past season, especially from a power department, I'd be extremely hesitant about committing that type of deal to a player like Matt Chapman, especially when, you know, the Blue Jays have money to spend this winter, right? Probably $40 to $50 million they'll be looking to spend, but do you want to eliminate half of that to Matt Chapman and not really improve your offense while doing so? It gives me pause. Like, obviously, you're not going to find a better defender that you can acquire than Matt Chapman. That goes without saying. But are there better options offensively out there that you could pursue? Probably, right? So I think both from a roster construction standpoint and a financial perspective, probably a safe bet that Matt Chapman signs elsewhere and the Blue Jays end up receiving a compensation pick after the fourth round in next year's draft. It's not a great compensation for losing a player of that caliber, but at the end of the day, like, I don't really see where it makes sense to commit those types of dollars and the type of term that Matt Chapman will desire for a player that just, he's not what you need offensively. So, you know, as upsetting as it may be for some Blue Jays fans, or for a lot of Blue Jays fans, I think it's time for both sides to move on here. And that'll be easier said than done for the Blue Jays, obviously, because the free agent market's really thin, right? We've already established that in previous episodes. It's been a large talking point throughout the entire offseason so far, especially at the third base position where, again, right, like, Jaime Candelario is probably the next best third baseman available behind Matt Chapman. And we dug into his metrics and profile a few weeks ago where it's like, yeah, he's coming off a great season split between the Tigers and Cubs, but I worry about his ability to be able to sustain that production, largely because he doesn't generate a lot of hard contact like, say, a Matt Chapman does. And the defense is, you know, a significant step back from Chapman, like many others would be, because Matt Chapman is just that great with his glove and arm. But Candelario would definitely be an option. You know, the Blue Jays reportedly have already spoken to his representatives, and according to Shai Davidi of Sportsnet, he's also a really strong clubhouse presence. He's really good friends with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., so there would already be some chemistry there that's been previously established between himself and one of the team's core hitters. And he's a switch hitter too, right? So that would certainly help with the lineup balance a little bit as well, considering the fact that the Blue Jays could potentially lose two left-handed hitters from last year's team with Brandon Belt and Kevin Kiermaier becoming free agents. So, you know, having somebody like Candelario who's able to switch hit and, you know, you could use him in a more platoon role and hope that that allows his offensive production to be a little bit more sustainable. You know, that could certainly be an option. There are guys like, dare I say, Justin Turner out there who is god-awful defensively at this stage of his career. I mean, you know, like, he's 38 years old. Like, what do you expect, right? Actually, he'll be 39 next season. And he can still hit, right? Like, he's still a pretty reliable hitter, but, you know, he'd probably require a lot of DH reps, and even if he were to play third base, it would be a struggle out there, and a very noticeable decline from Chapman's defense. You know, but he would add a lot of pop to the Blue Jays lineup, which is something they desperately need. And this kind of gets back to what I've been talking about over the last kind of month now, and that's, there's this balancing act, right, between how much defense are you willing to sacrifice for more offense or more slugging. And that's, again, the constant dilemma that I'm sure the Blue Jays front office is battling right now, where it's like, okay, if we don't bring back Chapman, we're going to lose some defense, but we're going to be able to add some more offense. But it's like, how much defense do we want to lose so that we can add, you know, how much defense are we willing to lose to add how much more power? Right? It's that balancing act. Like, how far down the scale are you willing to go defensively to raise that offensive scale up? So that's something we'll have to continue to monitor in the coming weeks / months. And that's, you know, that's a topic that's certainly not going to go away anytime soon. And it also applies to the vacancy in the outfield as well, right? With Kevin Kiermaier reaching free agency. And I would love to see Kiermaier back with the team, but again, the Blue Jays need a little bit more offense in that regard. And I still think at this stage of his career, Kiermaier wants to be an everyday player. I don't think he's on board with the idea of being like a fourth outfielder type, even though if he were to accept that role, he would be absolutely gold on this Blue Jays team for another season or two. And I think without a doubt, the Blue Jays organization would love to have Kiermaier back in that type of role. But I just don't think that's something he desires at this current time. And that's why it makes sense for the Blue Jays to be tied to somebody like Michael A. Taylor, who's essentially like a better hitting Kevin Kiermaier, who strikes out a lot, but he hit a career high 21 home runs this past season, but he's nowhere near as good defensively as Kiermaier. He's still well above average. And we kind of got a taste of that while watching Taylor steal multiple hits in center field during that 2-game wildcard series against the Twins. But, you know, again, like, how far would be adding Taylor to the mix going to move the needle for you, right? Like, I think, obviously, the Blue Jays need to add more thump to their lineup, but Taylor's not going to be somebody who hits in the middle of the order, right? Like, he's going to be that number 8, number 9 hitter. And sure, you'd love to have your number 8 or number 9 hitter blasting 20-plus home runs, but, like, at what cost, too, right? So, I think, sure, Taylor would be a decent option, but can you aim a little bit higher and, like, sacrifice maybe a little bit more defense to get you some more power? Sure, right? Like, if you were to look at, for example, just because he's a marquee name, Cody Bellinger, right? Way more expensive than a guy like Michael A. Taylor. Not as good defensively, at least in the outfield, as a Michael A. Taylor. But he would, without a doubt, be a better overall hitter than Taylor. And that's what you would get in that price and paying him, you know, $25 to $30 million per season. Or, you know, you look at, say, for example, a guy like Teoscar Hernandez or Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who had a really good defensive season and blasted a career high in doubles and home runs this past season. Both guys would give you a lot more offense than Taylor would, despite being, you know, not as skilled defensively as a guy like Taylor or Kiermaier. So it gets, you know, it all points back to that balance between offense and defense. And I don't think the Jays are interested in reverting back to where things were defensively, especially in the outfield in 2022, where it was like, sure, Springer was your best defender, but like, he doesn't have the range or quickness to be a really good center fielder anymore, right? You put him in right field, above average defender. And Varsho's still going to be around, right? And I think it's probably a safe bet to assume that he's going to move to center field full-time next season, depending on who the Blue Jays acquire. But I think for the most part, you're largely going to see Varsho take over that everyday center fielder spot, which opens up that left field corner and, you know, again, kind of makes a potential reunion with Lourdes Gurriel Jr. intriguing, right? Especially considering the fact that he improved his defense a lot in Arizona this past season, and with, you know, that wrist issue no longer bothering him, he was able to find his power stroke again. You already know the type of chemistry that he has inside that clubhouse, but it's like, one, would the Blue Jays want to, you know, potentially at least go back or like undo the significance behind that blockbuster trade last year? And kind of, especially from like a clubhouse culture standpoint, like, it wasn't just the on-field performance as to why the Blue Jays felt that Gurriel was expendable. They also wanted to change up their culture off the field. And, you know, would they want to potentially set that back? And as well, would Gurriel even be interested in coming back to the Blue Jays next season? I mean, that's another question in entirely on its own. But again, it's another situation that's worth monitoring throughout this winter. And you know, personally, I have no ill will towards, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr., but I can see the upside, the benefits, and the downside to bringing him back for another stint. And speaking of intriguing situations involving, you know, potentially former Blue Jays, is Hyunjin Ryu. And there's been, I guess, not a lot said, but a lot of uncertainty floated out in the ether about what his status will be in 2024, where, you know, there were a few weeks ago, actually it may have been longer than that, Hyunjin Ryu returned home to South Korea and held a media presser with local reporters, and kind of clouded his future and whether or not he would return to North America for another season. And it sounded like he was going to take a wait and see type of approach, and that made all the sense in the world given his age and injury history and the fact that, you know, at this stage of his career, performance wise it's taken a considerable dip. But Scott Boras, again, a client of Hyunjin Ryu's, or Hyunjin Ryu was a client of his, was asked about Ryu's status and confirmed that he will be back in Major League Baseball next season, and that he's already received a high volume of interest across the industry. And again, that could just be agent speak, hyping up a client. But it kind of did like a 180 on reuse comments. And, you know, like things can change in a month's time or a week's time. But that was a little shocking, at least for me, to think that, you know, somebody of his caliber, you know, which traditionally has to wait until the later months of the winter to sign a new contract, to hear that there's already been, allegedly, reportedly, a fair amount of interest in his services is a little shocking, I'm not gonna lie. But again, this is Scott Boras talking, so we do have to take it with a grain of salt, obviously. But you know, personally, I wasn't sure if Ryu was going to come back to North America this season or next season. I had some sort of feeling that he may decide to just play one or two seasons in the KBO, back where he started, fulfilling that commitment when he left for Major League Baseball ahead of the 2013 season, that it was always, you know, assumed that he will finish his career back in the KBO. And given the fact that Ryu will be 37 years old in March, coming off a shortened season because of Tommy John surgery, I had some sort of feeling that, or gut feeling that this was going to be it. But, you know, maybe he wants to have one last kick at the can of trying to win a World Series championship, right? Because the year that he joined the Blue Jays in 2020, the Dodgers won the World Series that season, right? Like, Ryu left right just as the Dodgers won. And, you know, maybe he wants another chance at that. Obviously, when he signed with the Blue Jays, he was hopeful that, you know, one day they would emerge as a legitimate World Series contender. And, you know, since then, all the Blue Jays have to show for is three first-round exits. So, you know, maybe that's still something that he is holding out hope for before, again, he finishes things up in the KBO. But we'll see. I mean, again, I don't expect Ryu to sign anytime soon, but it is certainly worth noting that, you know, we'll probably see him back somewhere in the big leagues in 2024. So in terms of, you know, what his chances would be of returning to the Blue Jays, I don't really see that happening. You know, Ryu was absolutely a critical signing for the Blue Jays, right? Like, he was that big, he was the kickstarter, essentially, to this competitive window, right? Like, his signing during the 2019-20 offseason really signaled that this franchise was taking a turn towards exiting its rebuilding phase and becoming more competitive again and wanting to, you know, invest in free agency. And, you know, Ryu had a ridiculous 2020 season where he was nearly worth two wins over 12 starts. And it's unfortunate that the injury in 2022 to his elbow ate up the back half of his four-year deal with the Blue Jays, because, you know, who knows what may have happened in 2022 or even 2023 had Ryu stayed healthy. Because, you know, you look at that 2022 season and Ryu was a shell of himself, largely because he was already experiencing elbow discomfort and pain before he underwent surgery. So, you know, that 5.67 ERA over those six starts is not indicative of, you know, his skill level by any means. But at the same time, too, he'll be 37 years old next season. The Blue Jays, despite being unsure about Alek Manoah and the final spot in their starting rotation, I think the Blue Jays are probably better off seeking somebody who, if need be, could move to the bullpen. And Ryu is just, he does not classify as that type of pitcher. Like, he's just, he's not built to pitch at relief. And so because of that, I don't want to really have him compete for that number five spot and potentially lose out to whether it's a Alek Manoah or Bowden Francis or anyone else who enters that competition. So, you know, it's probably best that, again, both sides part ways. And, you know, obviously the Blue Jays would be are extremely appreciative of the commitment that Ryu has shown, or did show over his four seasons with the Blue Jays. And you know, his demeanor even after being shut down with Tommy John surgery, it never wavered. Always had a bright personality, a smile on his face, you know, whenever he was around the team. And you know, you could just see how happy and upbeat everyone was after he did return earlier this season from rehabbing from that Tommy John surgery. And, you know, to his credit, like, despite returning earlier than, you know, most would have expected, despite his own perseverance, he did quite well in his 11 starts coming off of surgery. I mean, there's still, you know, like, there were a lot of concerns, not a lot of swing and miss. He got hit around a few different times, but all in all, like, you can't argue with a 3.46 ERA over 52 innings pitched, right? So that certainly plays as a back end starter. And you know, if Ryu's interest level is genuine to return to Major League Baseball next season, I have no doubt that he'll end up somewhere logging, if he stays healthy, logging considerable innings as a back-end starter for somebody, even though that probably won't be the Blue Jays. Now, the Blue Jays did actually make a few transactions earlier this week once free agency opened officially on Monday. And the first of those moves, obviously, was to issue a qualifying offer to Matt Chapman. But they also added Mitch White back to the 40-man roster. And for anyone who didn't pay attention to Mitch White's, or the end of Mitch White's 2023 season with AAA Buffalo, that probably came as a shock to you. Because most of you remember Mitch White as the guy who, you know, barely pitched out of the bullpen for the Blue Jays. And when he did, he was an absolute tire fire, which is totally fair. But he made some critical adjustments down in the minors and pitched really well down the stretch and earned himself a spot back on the 40-man roster. Because had he not done that, or had the Blue Jays not added him back to the 40-man roster, he probably would have been taken in the Rule 5 draft. And considering that the Blue Jays are already hurting from a minor league pitching depth standpoint, they could not afford to lose somebody like Mitch White, who showed a lot of promise over his final few starts at AAA Buffalo. So I'm really intrigued to see what he looks like coming into spring training in 2024. And, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibilities that he forces his way into that fifth starter competition where, you know, if he's able to regain that presence that he had on the mound in Buffalo last September, where he was striking out, you know, waves of hitters, and limiting hard contact, like that's the potential that the Blue Jays saw in him when he was with the Dodgers organization in 2022. So, you know, probably, we should probably give, you know, a slimmer of hope to Mitch White, if nothing else, that he can be that AAA depth for the Blue Jays in 2024. And speaking of depth, the Blue Jays also made a separate depth move in acquiring Brendan Little, and essentially a cash deal with the Chicago Cubs, a very minor deal, somebody that, you know, is not going to make headlines by any means, but an important acquisition because, again, it further strengthens the organization's pitching depth level. And despite the fact that Little isn't a traditional starter, he has started in the past. He made a couple of starts this past season, but he had more been a multi-inning reliever for the most part of the last few seasons. Really coming out of that, you know, canceled COVID season for the minor leagues, Little had gone away from being a starter, which it had been his role up to that point. But there's definitely some intrigue with Little where, you know, if he's stretched out as a starter or sticks as that, you know, type of bulk reliever type, there's some upside from a swing and miss perspective where he's only a two-pitch pitcher. So again, that kind of leads me to believe that he's better suited as a reliever, but he's got two quality weapons in a mid-90s sinker and high 80s or mid to high 80s slider, and that slider generates the majority of his swing and miss, where his sinker allows him to keep balls on the ground. But you know, like he posted a modest 23.1% strikeout rate across 73 and a third innings with the Cubs minor league affiliate in 2023. He also issued walks at 12% clip, so there is some improvement or some need for improvement there. But because of that sinker, he was able to induce a 64% ground ball rate. He did get lit up with the long ball a little bit, allowing a 17.1% home run to fly ball rate, despite keeping a lot of his batted balls on the ground. You know, that's an arm, especially as a left-hander, that, as the Blue Jays said, they really like his stuff, and he could have a future out of a big league bullpen. Now, like, obviously, there's still some further development that needs to be had with Little, who won't be 28 years old until next August. And because he wasn't on the Cubs 40-man roster, the Blue Jays were able to acquire him and add him to their 40-man roster. So therefore, he has all three minor league options, which is incredibly valuable for a guy that, again, left-hander, he's got that mid-90s sinker, mid to high 80s slider, and there could be some more upside in there if he's able to, again, cut down the walks and home runs a little bit and up the strikeouts a little bit more with that wipeout slider that he has. And it pairs extremely well with that mid-90s sinker, where you know, from his left-handed arm slot, you know, that sinker will come cutting down and in against right-handed batters. It'll dart low and away against left-handed batters. The slider will do, you know, have similar actions on it. So You know, he can use both weapons at both sides of the plate. You know, so that's definitely an arm. You know, again, not a marquee name, easy for me to say, by any means. But you can never have enough pitching depth, right? Especially, again, with a guy who has all three options available to him for the Blue Jays to, you know, bounce him back and forth between the big leagues and AAA Buffalo next season. So I would not be surprised whatsoever if at some point, you know, we see Brendan Little pitching for the Blue Jays out of their bullpen at some point next season. So definitely a savvy little pickup there by Ross Atkins in the Blue Jays front office, even though these days Ross Atkins, you know, certainly has lost a lot of fanfare with his actions over the last few months, and understandably so, right? He definitely dug him in a pretty steep hole, particularly with his end of season media availability last month. But, you know, so far at least, even though there haven't been, you know, many transactions so far, despite a few questionable coaching changes, right? You add a offensive coordinator title to Don Mattingly's responsibilities, which is a little baffling, especially considering that Guillermo Martinez will also remain as the hitting coach. I don't really understand those decisions, but clearly the Blue Jays are trusting that with the help of a veteran like Mattingly and the removal of Dave Hudgens and, you know, potentially even further additions, that the Blue Jays have the right minds internally to help get the most out of their offense, which they weren't able to do last season. But I mean, asking Don Mattingly to be more involved on the hitting side, I mean, okay, you know, sure, he's a very established major league player, former major league player, but, you know, things didn't go quite well with the Miami Marlins offense during his tenure there. So, you know, like, sure, I have no doubt that, you know, Mattingly is a very smart individual from my baseball perspective, but, you know, is he the type of guy that's going to get Vladdy back to himself and Springer and Kirk? I don't know. I mean, you know, he clearly has a strong relationship with Bo Bichette. That was well documented throughout this past season, right? There are countless times we would see them talking in the dugout together during games, but I don't know. It's definitely an interesting decision, but from a player personnel perspective, I mean, Ross Atkins' first move, albeit a minor one, is certainly off to a decent start. And, you know, with the GM meetings now closed, we probably won't hear, you know, too many rumblings, at least, you know, through the end of this week. But, you know, I'm sure with the non-tender deadline coming up soon and the winter meetings not too far away, that things will certainly pick up again as we, you know, advance closer to the end of November and the start of December. But this, at least from an outside perspective, certainly seems like a productive information gathering, you know, position that the Blue Jays were able to put themselves in here, where, you know, they learned more about Candelario and what Matt Chapman's market will be, and, you know, even Yoshin Nobu Yamamoto, who is arguably the best pitcher available in free agency, the Blue Jays I've already been linked to him. Ross Atkins apparently went over to the MPB earlier this season to scout Yamamoto personally. I don't really see a fit with Yamamoto, but you know, it's certainly interesting that you know, the Blue Jays at least did their due diligence on a pitcher of his caliber. And you know, who knows what might happen, but I think at the end of the day, the Blue Jays are probably better off targeting a back end starter and focusing the majority of their resources on the position player group, which, as Ross Atkins said, that's probably what they're going to end up doing, and that's a priority for them this winter. But as with any offseason, there's typically a fair amount of unpredictability that goes along with it. So it will certainly be interesting times for the Blue Jays over these next few weeks / months. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.